Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And we are joined today by our colleague, Devin Coldaway, who just landed in Los Angeles. Welcome, Devin.
Hey, glad to be here.
How fitting that you're in Hollywood and we're going to talk about a movie.
Yeah, that's, boy, it's a real coincidence. We planned it that way.
Not the most, like, summery or glamorous movie, though.
No, there's a lot of cars here too, though, and there was a car in the movie, so I think there's a lot of coincidences at work here.
Let's not even jump right into the movie because it'll just put me in a horrible mood. Let's start with, why are you in LA, Devin?
Well, we're down here for the AR/VR session that we're doing. We've got a bunch of speakers and demos and all kinds of cool stuff. I'm here in the UCLA campus where we're having the event, and I went to UCLA, so this is actually really pleasant for me. I haven't been back in a while.
Just to be clear, I knew the answer to that question, and I asked it on behalf of our audience and then completely tuned out. I was actually slacking Vian, so
that's, but I'm the sure same you way did you tune out for every events. Question you ask.
No, that's how we do podcasts here. I can always hear wrong answers, especially when Devin is the one giving the wrong answer. My ears just perk up. Okay, but before we get into, wait, what movie are we talking about? Hold the Dark, right?
We're talking about Hold the Dark, which is on Netflix, yeah. But before that.
Yeah, before that, let's talk about a Hulu property. Like, longtime fans of the podcast know how I feel about Hulu. And the show we're going to talk about changes that in no way. I love Hulu, and I love You, America with Sarah Silverman. Have either of you guys seen it?
I've seen clips, but I've never seen an entire episode.
I really, really, really suggest it. And, like, I happen to be, like, a late-night talk show junkie. Like, I love all of them for some reason. Like, it just speaks to me. But she is doing something. It's kind of like, it makes me think a little bit of, not content-wise, but, like, stylistically, it reminds me a lot of Nanette by Hannah Gadsby. It's, like, a totally just new way to think about doing late night. Like, for one, she doesn't open her show. She does open her show with a monologue in front of an audience, but the pre-opening is actually just her talking to the camera in an empty studio. And so, like, she tells these jokes, but there's no laugh track or anything because most of that is supposed to actually be more important, like, more serious conversation. Or I guess, like, you know, monologue. But I don't know. It's just really interesting. And the whole premise behind it, and this is really clear in season one. Season two, she's become slightly more combative. But in season one, like, the thesis of it was, like, we don't need another person to get up and be angry about the state, like, the political state of our country. Like, we need people who are willing to, like, listen and, like, create common ground and, like, common bonds from the left and the right sides. And so she, like, does these really interesting things. Like, she went and had dinner with a family who lives in Louisiana who all voted for Trump. And she went and had dinner with them. And, like, yeah, it's edited and it's TV and blah, blah, blah. But, like, there were some interesting conversations happening there. And she actually, like, I think she liked them. And I think they liked her. And it was just, I don't know, it's just something that isn't really on television. And I really, really enjoy it. And I've always thought Sarah Silverman was, like, slightly crude and crass and, like, a little too much for me. But this is, like, just right Sarah Silverman. It's almost like she like, matured a little bit and doesn't have to go for shock value all the time. She's just really fucking funny. So those are my thoughts on I Love You, America with Sarah Silverman.
So if somebody hasn't watched the show yet, which episode would you recommend starting with?
The first one. And I would, like, I honestly think, like, they're not old enough for, like, the timeliness to really make that much of a difference. So I would actually say start at the first one, but be aware that the first, like, 5 minutes of it are a song. But it's a really good song. Like, without the song, you don't get the show. I actually believe that. Like, the song lays the foundation for the entire series. So
maybe you should start doing the intros for Disrupt.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll get up and be like, none of you care what I'm saying, but I'm here. Something like that. But I do recommend it. And Anthony, if you can, like, squeeze in one or two episodes and we'll do a follow-up on this.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, everyone go see I Love You America, and especially you, Anthony, because I want to know if you agree with me or you think it's super stupid.
Absolutely. I will say I watched one segment that was kind of making the rounds because it was what Sarah Silverman said about Louis C.K. And I think people were really holding that up as just a great example of how that I think a lot of people are sort of struggling with how to deal with and talk about some of this Me Too stuff. And obviously, I mean, I assume most of us are not personal friends with Louis C.K., but I think the way she balanced that in terms of acknowledging, hey, somebody can still be my friend, I can still care about them, but that is not in any way condoning what they did, was really impressive. Because I think so often when people try to defend, not even defend, but like just say, hey, I have a relationship with the person and I'm not like completely writing them off, it comes off as a defense. And she does this amazing thing. She's like, I'm not defending any of it. That was like garbage behavior. And this, you know, this guy needs to like actually make amends. But also I'm not going to pretend that, you know, he's completely dead to me either.
Yeah, she was like, you can love someone and that person can have behaved horribly and you can condemn their behavior and love someone. And those two things are not mutually exclusive. And like, that is the kind of like middle ground that I'm talking about. And she does that with a bunch of stuff where she's just like, and there are certain things that she doesn't have any tolerance for. Like she did a segment recently on climate change. And she was like, there's no middle ground with that, right? Like, there's no like, oh, let's compromise. Like, it's like, no, we're ruining the planet. And unless people realize that, we're in big trouble. But like the vast majority of the stuff she talks about, she like finds, she just finds a way to like detect and investigate the nuance of things in a way that doesn't feel like, it's trying too hard. It's just like I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think her tone, like, I think she feel, I'm like projecting a little bit, but it feels a little bit like maybe she's thinking like legacy wise. And if you go and look, like a lot of her stand-up is fucking hilarious. Like there's no doubt about that. She is very funny. But I think she was like, okay, but what do I want to leave the world beyond just my stand-up, you know? And I think this is part of that in a lot of ways. I think she's like trying to leave, not just make you laugh, but make you like think about things and explore stuff that you might not have thought about. And I really appreciate it. It's a lot, it's like John Oliver-esque, but she put her own spin on it. In fact, in the first season, she did this little bit where she had a regular male white late night host like sit in the wings. So if she ever said something that was too outrageous or outside the norm, she would be like, cut to him, go to Johnny. And Johnny would be like, oh, you know, or like say something like incredibly cliche. And then they'd pan back over to Sarah and she'd be like, is everybody okay? Okay, we'll continue. But it's just funny and creative. I really liked it. So that's all I have to say.
Cool. So everyone should check that out. I'm sure we're also going to have a completely unreserved recommendation of this film reviewing too, Hold the Dark, which is a Netflix film. It's written by Macon Blair and directed by Jeremy Saulnier, I think is how it's pronounced. He directed Green Room and Blue Ruin. We should say this movie has a lot of plot in it. And so what we're going to try to do is have a spoiler-free discussion of our general impressions of the movie. And then probably at some point, I think, at least I really want to get into some of the details. And so we'll have a warning before we get into that.
Yeah. So I think the best way to get started off the top with this is to just read part of the text conversation that I had with Anthony when we were watching the show. So it starts, and it's to be clear, I started the movie at like 7:15 and he started it at like 8:15. So we were having an asynchronous-ish conversation. And my first text was, just want to say on the record, what am I watching? And he said, Hold the Dark, or is that more of a what the fuck is this? And I said, for sure the latter. And it really just, you know, I said, feel free to text me your bewilderment as you get it started. And he's just like, yeah, this is weird. And I'm like, yeah, very weird. And it essentially just gets weirder and weirder as the movie goes on. So it was really delightful for me because all the stuff that Anthony thought was weird at the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, baby, you have no idea. Like, that's all normal now. I'm an hour and a half in. So it's bizarre. That would be my like kind of one thing I would throw at this movie. It was just absolutely bizarre. I'm interested to hear what Devin thinks. I'm sure Devin loved it.
I think you jumped out before you got to some of the good parts of this text conversation though. Like at one point said,
so,
and this is not a big spoiler, okay, now she's naked and wearing a mask, to which you responded, lol, again, not even that weird anymore. What a long road you have ahead.
What the shit? Now we're in Iraq? That was your answer. It's just, it was too much. It was too much. I mean, oh, Lord.
Anyway, Devin, go on.
Devin, what did you think?
Well, it's, what's weird to me is sort of how weird the movie is, because Green Room was, I really liked Green Room, and it was, in a way, a very, very straightforward movie. Like, one of the most straightforward movies I've seen in a while. And there was no weird otherworldly anything. There was no like themes or anything like mythology, like the idea of these, you know, the basic plot with this, these wolves that seem to be preying on this town. You're kind of like, huh, is there, what are the themes going on here? In Green Room, it's straight up a punk band is stuck with a bunch of Nazis trying to kill them in a green room in a middle of nowhere. And that's like the entire movie. And so I really liked how straightforward that was. Oh, it is. Yeah, it's a great movie. And it's really tense.
And Patrick Stewart leads the neo-Nazis, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I liked him.
I liked him as that. Some people thought he was miscast, but I thought he was just kind of like, it was like a wrench thrown into the movie where you're like, whoa, this is kind of weird, but he was very threatening. But so, like, it was a very straightforward movie, right? And then I kind of expected that from Hold the Dark. And, you know, it's based on this book. Like, Macon Blair did the screenplay, but then William Giraldi did the book that came out a while back. And I have not read the book or anything. But apparently the book is equally weird. I was expecting it to be, like, about the wolves, about the guy, the wolf expert, Russell Core.
Yeah, exactly.
In.
That's what they made it sound like it was supposed to be about.
I mean, the poster is, like, literally him with the gun and, like, you know, he's out in the wilderness, but that, you know, not too much like spoiler here. This is in the first, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes of the movie. He only goes out there for a little bit, but,
you see a wolf like twice in the whole film.
Yeah. So I guess, like, you know, without spoiling too much, it's kind of like, if you go in with any kind of expectation, I guarantee that expectation will not be met. And maybe you'll like the sort of like, you may like what you get, but it's not what you're going to go in expecting, in a good way and a bad way.
And mostly bad ways, though, because honestly, here was my mindset. I sat down and I read the little description or whatever on Netflix, and it was like, mysteriously, children are, you know, disappearing from a Alaskan town called Kielut, and, you know, a wolf expert comes to figure out the problem, but there might be something more mysterious lurking underneath. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Like,
yeah.
Are they, you know, what could this be? But I was also ready for something slightly boring, like a lot of like, you know, long pans of the wilderness and wide shots of like creeks running through snow and stuff like that, which we got plenty of.
We got a few of those.
Plot wise, it was just, I mean, the mystery of what's happening to the children is revealed in the first 10 minutes. And from there, the whole thing is a mystery. I mean, you don't know what the hell's going on the whole time. And honestly, it was so weird and so like jumping from these one weird thing to the next that I almost had trouble looking for the story underneath. You know, like, I'm an English lit major. That like is part of who I am, is to look at like stories like this and figure out all the symbols and shit, and like I couldn't focus on that because there were too many weird ass fucking symbols. It was almost like, what was that, it's not like this in content but in feel, like what was that show we reviewed recently, Anthony, that I hated,
with Jonah
Hill and Emma Stone?
Oh, Maniac.
weirdo. Yeah, maniac. It felt kind of like that, where it was just getting weirder and weirder to the point where I was like, I have to look at this at surface level, because at surface level, this is confusing me. I can't go beyond the surface.
Well, to me, I know, Anthony, you probably have something to say, but I just want to say on the subject of the sort of the symbology and stuff that was in there, because there was bringing up of this and that symbols and the, you know, the themes of the wolves and the wilderness and such.
Right.
I was ready for them to double down on those in a more, in a different way. And my problem, I guess, is that where, like, Green Room was very straightforward, and I expected that kind of straightforwardness in dealing with some more interesting themes and mystical stuff, like treating these weird things in a mystical way. But instead, it kind of, like, it was just very lopsided, and it bounced from really interesting things to really not interesting things, and things that really were compelling to things that weren't compelling. And, part of it was, I'm sure what just didn't kind of agree with how it was directed or the way that they did the screenplay. But it felt like they didn't really accomplish what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I'm reading the New York Times trailer right now, and it says, Mr. Saulnier earned and sustained your nervous attention in his grisly thriller Blue Ruin and the even better stomach churner Green Room. His visual flair remains the only consistently appealing part of Hold the Dark, a thriller that aspires to something deeper but never figures out what. And that's exactly how I feel. It's like, that there's supposed to be something under there. And I'm sure if I sat down with Mr. Saulnier, he would explain it to me. But it would take a few watches to parse for me, like, what exactly he was trying, what the point was. And I mean, there's very obvious layers, like you're talking about, with the wolves in the wilderness and, masculinity and man versus himself and blah, blah, blah. But, like, actually getting to the bottom of it, you'd have to watch the movie. I would have to watch the movie again. I'm absolutely not going to do that. I'm just not going to. So that's about as much as I can say without spoiling. Anthony, what I mean, I know what your thoughts were as you were watching it. Now that you've settled into it, do you have those thoughts changed?
I would say that definitely there was just an element of, I had the same expectation of, I thought it was going to be this sort of, stately, beautiful wilderness movie about this guy hunting these wolves. It is not that at all, except in some ways it is, in the sense that it is still shot as if it's that movie. And so it's just like these, like you were saying, these wilderness shots. There are a lot of sort of like portentous shots, either of nature or of the characters. There's this wolf mask that plays a big role in it. And so like everything happens with I think a handful of exceptions, everything, even though there's a lot of crazy shit that happens in the movie, it all happens in this sort of slowly and deliberately, with everyone looking really sad. And sometimes that, I don't, this is not a good movie, but like it was like, I just enjoyed looking at it because it was beautiful to look at. But other times there's just this sort of ridiculous mismatch where it was so like pretentious and so dour and dark that it almost got laughable. And so, it just like, it was kind of all over the place.
Yeah. And yeah. I do want to say that, like the New York Times reviewer said, that Saulnier and whoever his, I think he's using the same cinematographer as at least Green Room. He's the same director, obviously, and the same cinematographer. And you can see that look, and you can see the care that he's set up his shots with, the lighting, the focus was amazing in this movie. The craft of this movie is like off the charts. Like these are extremely talented filmmakers, and I thought the acting was usually good, but I thought there might have been some bad direction in there. But it was a very arresting movie to watch. But you were kind of hoping that it would get better, as far as the other aspects. You were like, God, this is so cool, and this part's so cool. I want it to play out better. I want this to make sense. I want this guy to, do this or do that and help me like this movie more. But as a movie, it didn't play out. But as a film, like as cinematically, it is a very impressive thing to watch.
I also think, there's the actors are just, this has this really talented cast with Jeffrey Wright as Russell Core, Alexander Skarsgård as the husband who's in Iraq, as we alluded to. Riley Keough is the woman.
Riley Keough Yeah. Who is totally underutilized. She's far more skilled than the movie let her be, I feel like. But
yeah. And I felt like in general, everyone, other people were maybe not underutilized the way she was, but they had, they basically were very one note in a way that I find, you know, just kind of a bummer. I mean, particularly Jeffrey Wright, who I think in general has not been used well in the movies, because I remember him from the Angels in America miniseries, where he was just so full of life and funny and showed all these different sides of himself. But I feel like for some reason, every time he gets cast, he now has to play this very sad, serious guy who never smiles and never really shows any life. And this is like the ultimate example of that, where he's just sort of like frowning and sometimes is allowed to be slightly confused and frightened, but that's it. Yeah. That's the entire performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And even Alexander Skarsgård, like I wouldn't, you know, he's a good actor. But he's capable of stretching his wings. Like we see that with Big Little Lies, and this didn't even feel like they're almost similar characters in a lot of ways, and I still didn't feel that same breadth, you know, in his character in this movie as I did in other things he's played in. And I don't know if that's due to direction, like you're saying, Devin, or that's just comes down to the plot itself just didn't allow for any stretching, you know.
Yeah, but I think that they tried to do a light touch because, you know, it's based on this book, and I think that possibly having read the book, the writers of the screenplay could say, like, well, we'll just, you know, there's a lot of, this character has a lot of depth, but we can't show it because we can't make a, you know, 20-hour-long movie. So why don't we'll just imply it with this, you know, this interaction here. We'll imply the hidden depths. But you can't just do that, like, because there's just, by merely implying it, you leave so much out that most people are just going to be in the dark, and you really don't have that information in there. So you're like, well, what's the relationship between you know, Vernon, the husband, and like the Native American guy that in that town that he knows very well. Like, they're obviously friends, but like there's this other stuff going on, and there's so little information, and their interactions are so spare and few that you're kind of like, well, I don't understand, and I can't possibly understand because there's nothing to understand.
Well, exactly. And there would have been time well spent, like on doing that instead of, like, there's a scene about halfway through the movie that's like essentially just like a big shootout, and I don't think that spoils anything because you don't know who's shooting who, but like that didn't need to be that long, honestly, in my opinion. That could have been shortened by like half and it would have been fine. Same thing with like the random throw to Iraq early on. They're trying to show us who this character is, but it didn't need to be in there. And it's worth noting that this movie had the budget to go to fucking Morocco to shoot 5 minutes of something that gives us nothing. It gives us no insight whatsoever to this guy other than, oh, he's coming home from being in the army. Okay. We could have figured that out, you know? Like, that is the kind of thing where you imply it and then he shows up and you have that information. You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed really poorly executed. And I haven't read the book, so I don't know what the story should be. You know what I mean? At its base level.
I think that there's a little more depth given to some stuff, but I don't think it's substantially different. I think, actually, I read a few reviews, and a lot of readers basically had the same expectations, and they went in, and they were like, well, you know, I was kind of expecting this kind of, like, out in the wilderness, like, the edges of civilization, like, man versus nature kind of thing.
Wild, and like, yeah, like, something like that.
And then they were like, well, but then I got blindsided by this, like, this kind of like crime thriller stuff that is like not well explained, and the intentions are kind of like murky, and the kind of themes of like, well, these people are, you know, more like animals than people. If you that might be a theme right there. It's like, yeah, but why should I care about that? Why aren't we explaining that better? Like, why don't I care about these characters? So there were issues with the book as well. I think it spelled things out a little more, but generally it was the same.
I will say the one exception before we go into spoilers is like that I thought the guy who played I think he's like a sheriff basically, he was the one character who wasn't like complex, but like I actually liked spending time with him. He just seemed like this guy who like is trying to do his job, not necessarily a great person, but like is like a solid,
The Jeffrey Wright character?
No.
The police chief.
The police chief? Oh. With the mustache?
Oh, he wasn't very likable to me, but yeah, okay.
I thought he was likable, or at least I was just looking for something to hold on to, and I thought he was yeah. He was fine.
I liked the I don't know what his name is, the dark haired guy who is the friend of Vernon.
Yeah.
He's American, I think.
Yeah, and he was giving the cops shit.
I liked him. He's far more likable to me, but unfortunately.
Cheon is his name.
Yeah.
Oh, Cheon. Yeah.
Yeah, Cheon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we may as well just move into spoiler territory briefly here.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Anthony. I think you were saying something. But...
No, that was it. That's all. Yeah, let's do spoilers.
I have questions.
One thing I was looking forward to was when the older lady who gets murdered later was like, oh, this, you know, Medora, the wife, is she's been taken over by like a wolf spirit. She's a skinwalker. I was like, oh shit, are they going to go in that direction and have this be like, not werewolves, yeah, but like, you know, this kind of like people living on the edge so hard that they literally are becoming wolves or something like that. And I was just like, this is going to be wild. And then it was not that. And then the shootout was just so long and like dragged out so much. And it was just like, all right, wait another 35 seconds.
Left field too. Like,
yeah, it didn't resolve anything or change anything. He was just like occupying the cops for like 20 minutes while, you know, his friend is getting away. And you don't even understand. You're like, why are you killing yourself in like 100 cops so this guy gets like a 20-minute, you know, head start? Why didn't you just not tell anybody? Why did they kill those cops in the parking lot? Slip away?
Let's reverse for a second. Let's just rewind. Because honestly, listeners, if you're still here, we've gotten into spoilers, but there is no reason to watch this film. So you might as well just stick with
us. Although I would counter that actually the only reason to watch it is just for the kind of like what the fuckness of it.
Exactly.
And so in that sense, like you should, you know, hopefully people stopped when we started talking about spoilers. But yeah, let's get into it.
Or to sit down with like a handful of your friends and have like some red wine and laugh your ass off. In which case you really don't need to leave. So there's a lot of options here. But the story starts with this dude coming to a town to figure out why this kid went missing. His mother says that he was taken by wolves. And then you realize that she actually killed him. Meanwhile, her husband is coming home from the war and is very upset with her and steals the kid's body and goes to bury him. And then his friend shoots all of the police. Yes, this all happens. It's the most bizarre thing in the world. Shoots all of the police, dies himself. There's like one police officer and then this core guy left. They go looking for this guy alone because I guess Alaska, there's only so many people. So they go looking for this guy alone and he finds them, shoots the dude with an arrow, finds his wife.
Shoots both dudes with arrows.
The movie. The movie's over, right? Like that.
Yeah. I mean, basically so,
okay,
the idea
is... Okay, here are a couple
is...
questions.
I think you're sort of underselling how many murders there are in this movie, but yes, essentially that's what happens.
There's
okay,
a lot
wait,
of murders,
what,
yeah.
What are your underlyings, Devin? Because I do have questions.
Well, like, I think that the sort of idea was the lady kind of summoned this wildlife expert here to her, like, this area where she had killed her own kid, who was basically, I don't know if you guys even picked up that the husband and wife were actually brother and sister.
Wait,
and
what?
That the,
oh,
yeah,
that's
and
important.
That the kid
see?
Was a child of incest, and she was either guilty about that or wanted to spare the kid the like fucked up dark life that they were leading. So she killed him, and then
wait,
the husband comes back.
When did they
back.
Say they were brother
How
and
did
sister?
You know they're brother and sister?
It's implied, and it's explicit in the book.
It's explicit in the book, but in the movie, where did they make that clear? Because I wasn't paying close enough attention. I really
well,
wasn't.
Well, one of the first
so
things she
know.
Says is that she's known her husband her whole life. And it's sort of you right off the bat you're kind of like, well, do you mean that literally? You haven't met him yet, so you're like, well, maybe she's just being romantic. But then later, the husband is talking with the what they call him the Indian hunter, just the dude in the tent. He's like, oh, I remember you. You came by with your sister, and I remember like you guys or you. I don't know if the sister was there, but he was like, I remember you.
Oh,
like
I think
you,
I remember that.
Your parents said you had these unnatural tendencies, and we tried to cure you. And, like, you guys aren't from around here, right? Like, you both have the look of the same blood or something like that. So it was, like, It wasn't said like, oh, you guys are incestuous, huh? But it was like implied.
So it's a little more subtext in the movie.
See, that answers a lot of my questions, because my first one is, why did this mom kill the killer son? That I didn't understand. I still don't understand why she called this guy out there. Was it just to like get some of the heat off her? Like he would go kill a wolf and everything would be fine?
She wanted him to find the body. And so she didn't want to just disappear. She wanted to like in some way to be pursued and maybe caught.
Why
though? Yeah, that's what I'm not sure about. Is like ultimately why did she like do it this weird way where she like killed the kid, wrapped him up in the basement, and then left the door unlocked so this guy, after she's like sent him on the wild goose chase or wild wolf chase, comes back and finds him, and then she's like, you know, number one wanted? Like, wait, what? Why?
Yeah, that was all very confusing to me. Like, and she said something in the movie about, like, I'll need something. I wonder if it was fear of Vernon, because she was like, I need something to show him. Like, I need, you know what I mean? Like, I need, maybe she was afraid that he would be mad that she killed the son, and so she could blame the wolves, and he would bring back a wolf pelt, and she would be like, oh, it was the wolves.
Yeah, but why not just put the kid out there, you know? Like, have the wolves chew on the kid for a while.
I think once you find the kid's body, it's obvious that it wasn't attacked. He wasn't attacked by wolves, that he was strangled.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely, like, my version of the plan wouldn't have had the kid wrapped up in plastic in the basement. But,
Yeah, and then Vernon comes back, and but the thing is, like, that's when it really starts to unravel, because he just, like, he comes back, and
that's when it unravels.
Starts killing cops.
Well, even he doesn't kill cops. His friend sacrifices himself. I mean, he kills a few people, but then the friend
including
goes
cops.
Up.
He starts off by killing those two cops.
And then his friend goes up and sets up a... You have to understand, this shootout is not just like a dude with a pistol shooting back at the cops. He has like an LMG, like a mounted machine gun up there shooting down from a second story window. Not even a window. It's like a barn. It doesn't even have glass there. There's just so much about it that is just so weird. And the cops finally shoot him, and then they go after, you know, Vernon, and they're in this like cave, hot springs, but they're always wearing these wolf masks. Like, why is the wolf mask part of it? I just don't understand. That's the point I'm trying to make. I don't know why this was a story worth telling.
Well, I was telling Anthony to go ahead, but
I think that the wolf mask thing, first of all, I think obviously there's meant to be some sort of like parallel between Vernon and Medora and wolves, and that's part of why they're like wearing the masks, and then by the end they're very animalistic, and then they sort of like run off together, but it's in this very kind of opaque way that doesn't illuminate anything for me, or it doesn't feel interesting in any way. It's just kind of like, oh, I guess you were trying to draw some parallels. I don't know. Sure. Okay. I think also just the specific way they would shoot these murders that Vernon did. Like, the first time he does it, it's shocking, but it just gets to be almost a joke that he just murders everyone he encounters. And to the point where at one point he comes out with it's his friend who's like, you know, nursed him. And he comes out with a mask and he's carrying this like ice pick or something. And I genuinely started laughing because I just knew, you know, you're just like, I know how this is going to play out. And, you know, his friend, and it's also because the friend, by the way, who I think is played by the writer, Macon Blair, is, you know, I mean, is kind of the only kind of almost funny character. But then, you know, you're just like, all right, well, I guess you're about to get stabbed in the head with the ice pick. And that is indeed what happened. And he just like, that's how, you know, he just wears the mask
fair,
and murders
his
everyone.
His friend was calling the cops.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like every setup was Vernon like getting in a position to kill someone. Like every scene was basically Vernon killing somebody. And for no particular reason. It's like, isn't he supposed to be going after his wife? Like, why is he killing everybody that he encounters?
Here's something that had no particular reason, or at least one that I could not detect. Why did, when Cor first shows up and is staying in her little cabin before he goes wolf hunting the next day, why did she get naked and put on the wolf mask and sit down with him and try to have him strangle her? Because that's what it looked like to me.
I think the idea was that she was conflicted about what she'd done. And she might have invited him there basically to say, like, my savage nature has killed my child. and I need someone to kill the wolf, and really the wolf is her and her husband. And but when she puts on that mask and comes out, then she's like trying to sort of punish herself, was my sort of idea afterwards. But I read that in the book, she does not put his hand on her neck. She puts his hand on
further south.
You know, the another part, you know, one of those down low parts. And
right.
Which doesn't downtown. Make any more sense. That makes much less sense, in fact.
It makes less sense. Yeah, exactly. I don't know, man.
I guess the other thing about the ending to me that was really mystifying, I mean, even if you accept that there's this sort of like dream logic to a lot of it, is the fact that Vernon doesn't kill Medora. I mean, I was glad. I've seen so many people die. But like, if you just try to understand like why he behaved the way he did, like presumably the reason he's like left this like trail of blood across all of Alaska is because he wanted revenge, and all these people potentially were getting in the way, either getting in the way of his revenge, or they didn't stop her, do enough to stop her from killing his son. So, like, when they confront each other, and it kind of doesn't go anywhere, it, like, really, what little investment I had in the story at that point just disappears. Because you're just like, wow, okay, wow, that was even more pointless and futile than I thought.
Well, you have to remember, at this point, I did not know that that was his sister. And I thought his ability to forgive her, I thought, like, wow, that's real love. But my feelings about it have definitely changed since I learned that they were siblings. But I actually liked the way that it ended, that he, like, forgives her.
Yeah, it's implied, and I think it's explicit in the book, or at least implied more strongly in the book, that she's pregnant again. But I don't know how that would be unless he was on a really short tour of Iraq or Afghanistan, wherever he was supposed to be. But the idea that she's pregnant, he's like, oh, well, we'll have another child and raise it, you know, in our wolfy way. But like that was, it was, if that's true, then that's like, it was so thinly put on there, like that no one could possibly understand or care because the characters don't have the emotional depth to show you that and to make that decision have any value for the viewer.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there were just so many parts that were drawn way too far out. Like, the parts that you want more of, you didn't get, and the parts you wanted less of, you got too much. Like,
true.
I would watch a movie about a small police force in a small town in Alaska where the people are dissatisfied with their community and the way it's being protected. I think that's interesting. And there was like a conversation about that, but it really veered off into a conversation about other stuff. That conversation itself was far too long. But one of the good quotes, I think, from the movie was him saying, like, I forget the exact line, but it was something about, like, your wife's going to get that call later. Yes. And I knew the second he said that, I was like, you're going to die, man. Do you not realize he's telling you he's going to kill you? Like, that's the threat right now.
If you didn't realize that he was going to, I mean, like, if you didn't realize he was going to die then you knew his fate was sealed when he literally said, when this is all over, I'm going to take her on, his pregnant wife, I'm going to take her on a vacation out to like Bermuda or something. And yeah, I was like, oh, man, dude, you just sealed, you just put the nail in your coffin. That's dead words.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. I'm curious, did you watch it with someone else or did you guys watch this alone?
I watched it alone.
You watched it alone too, Devin? Mm-hmm. I felt like it would have been way more fun with someone else. I mean, that's why mostly why I was texting you, Anthony, because I just felt like I needed company for that. I wish that we could have all watched it together, or that Maria was home or something and I could have watched with her. She probably wouldn't have allowed that movie to play, honestly. But yeah, I feel like actually the only recommendation I would give to watch this movie is if you're going to do it with some friends, just to be like, wait, what? Over and over again. If that's
and people who appreciate good cinematography, because it was really well shot and
set up. It was beautiful
and stuff like that. Yes. So it was a really impressive movie technically. So it's worth watching in that way.
Yeah, I would say also that it definitely makes me so. Jeremy Solnay, I think the next thing he did is the first two episodes of True Detective season 3. Mm-hmm. I still think he's an incredibly talented director. I'm interested in what he does next. Yeah. I'm a lot less interested in anything else by William Giraldi, the guy who wrote the book, or William Blair, who wrote the screenplay. I think the last question I have is, can either of you explain why it's called Hold the Dark?
Yo, I don't know why it's called that, but I do know that the whole time that I was watching it, I kept thinking, hold the dark. And I was like, no, hold this movie. I kept thinking of it as like an order you give to like a waiter. Like, hold this movie. That's not the part that I want in my order. You know?
Yeah, I'll have an Alaskan winter. Hold the dark, please.
I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that now that I know they're siblings, the whole movie's opened up to me. But the fact that like there is all this sinister energy between the husband and wife, and they like are drawn to each other anyway, like let's hold the dark, we are the dark, let's hold each other kind of thing. Like that's kind of what it felt like to me. And same thing with like the core character. Like he clearly has like issues and is depressed, and he has issues with his daughter, he's sick and he's trying to get a hold of her. It's like why even go there? Do you know what I mean? Like that's another like being attracted to something that you know is no good. You know, like, and he should have left the second that she is naked with a wolf mask trying to get him to strangle her.
Yeah, I'd be like, I'm out.
Being like, okay, I'm done. Like, sorry, you lost your son. Bye. Like, I got to go now, actually. Like, I'm leaving now. And that's another, like, hold the dark-ish moment to me as well. For whatever hold the dark means. I don't think it means it in the way that I was thinking it. Like, leave the dark on the side. I think it means, like, I'm going to hold on to the dark. But yeah, super bizarre. Thanks a lot, Anthony.
You're welcome. Well, I feel like we've been having too many positive episodes recently anyway, although I guess not Maniac, but, you know,
yeah, just wanted to mix it up. Honestly, though, like, Anthony, every time you choose, like, these garbage films and TV shows for us to watch, the thing about it is it doesn't just waste the hours you spend watching it. Because then we just have to talk about it. It's like full 4 hours have been dedicated. That movie was 2 hours long. 2 hours and 5 minutes long. It is a long
your
fucking
time
movie.
Is worthless anyway.
No, it's not.
Well, I enjoyed our conversation about it at least. Because that's actually the thing.
This wasn't a waste. This was fun.
I feel like usually if it's something bad, it's almost like this was the same thing when Daryl and I reviewed Insatiable. Was my roommate was like, why are you even reviewing it if you hated it so much? And I was like, no, that's the whole thing. It's like, we have to do the podcast to like justify that the time I spent watching it. Otherwise, it was a complete waste. Anyway, that's my argument.
Okay.
It's been fun. Yes, I agree. And it was fun watching the movie, and it was fun discussing it.
I am glad I watched it. I don't want to watch it again, but I enjoyed watching it.
Well, I'm just appreciative that you were there to answer my texts. And to know that you were suffering through it like an hour later.
Yes.
Was pleasant for me as well. So
I'm glad I can contribute in that way. well, let's wrap it up then. Let me just remind our listeners that if they enjoyed this podcast more than they enjoy watching Hold the Dark, they can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. They can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We're also available on pretty much every other podcast app. And Jordan and Devin, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everyone.